Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
All right, folks. I hope you can hear me. I don't know, because I'm not listening to the radio. All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. This is Dave Gahari, and you're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. It is now 6:02 p.m. Central Time, but really it's 5:02, because we had the spring forward early in the morning, and it's a beautiful day here in the Florida Panhandle, 65 degrees. The bees are buzzing, and the lizards are hunting, and the sun is shining. So it's beautiful. It's that time of the year. And thank you for tuning in to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakfreeradio.com. And, of course, you go to speakfreeradio.com, and you can hear the show by pressing the little black triangle that goes off to the right. And in that little yellow or orangey yellow circle, if you're not colorblind. And that's how you listen to it. If you're on your phone, there's a little phone icon on the left-hand side, at least on the computer, and you click on that to hear it through your phone. If you want to listen to the old shows, the archive shows, just click on podcasts, and then you click on the applicable icon for the show. And you'll see the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, and you click on that, and it will tell you the last show was show 72. I think that's right. I'm not sure. But then this might be show 73, and that's how you do it. And for all the shows, we got a bunch of shows. We got new people coming aboard as well. If you want to come into this program, you click on Call and Chat, and you'll see again those icons for the applicable shows. You click on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, and that will bring you into the waiting room in the studio. So that's how to do it. Okay, so Dave is here, so we'll get him in a minute. Okay, and what we'll go over now is what we always go over for the new listeners, is the show itself and how it works. This is a call-in show. So all of the topics are dictated by the callers. So they call in, they have a question or comment for Dr. David Duke. There you go. That's the way the show is going to go. And it goes from there. Now, Dave has about 2 minutes to answer the question or comment. And then about 15 seconds before the 2 minutes runs up or runs out, you'll hear that, and then on the 2 minute, you'll hear it again, and you might hear it again, and again, and again, who knows, you never know. So that 2 minutes, we don't hold it, exactly 2 minutes, and the reason is because it's all dependent upon the folks, the number of folks in the waiting room. So, as I've said before, sometimes we're packed, and I am moving the show along. Sometimes we're light, and that will allow Dave to elaborate a little more. But the idea is, you know, when there's a lot of people in, obviously, we got to hit it fast and hard. So that's it, and our ongoing challenge, which is, if anyone can let us know of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech, other than organized international Jewry, let us know, and we'll quit the show. Seriously, we will. I know I will. And if I click off, then it's over. The other part of that challenge is that if anyone can let us know of someone who can deliver the message of Jewish supremacism better than David Duke, we will also quit. And we've, of course, we haven't quit yet, but we will. And please just, you know, give it to us. Give us the greatest challenge, the greater challenge, so we can leave. Come on, it's Sunday night. Anyone, call in and let us know. Dave, we haven't spoken in a little while. How are you feeling, my friend?
I'm feeling fine. I just turned up the heater a little bit. It's a little cold today in my house. Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
It's in the 60s. So.
Yeah. How are you, Dave?
I'm pretty good. I've got a little congestion, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to ask you because we haven't talked in a little while, and so much stuff is happening, and you know what you have been, and we've touched on this briefly, but you have been, you know, literally dedicating your life to all this time. This can't be taken lightly. Is finally being exposed and recognized by huge numbers of people. I mean, you know, you can't predict it. Nobody can predict anything really, but the way that it's happened, I mean, the flood of people waking up to this existential threat is enormous. I'm not going to ask you if you could ever imagine when it would happen or if it would happen, because I don't think any of us could, but how do you feel knowing that what you've been saying is, you know, specifically Jewish supremacism, that's one of your books, is something that is dinner time conversation now?
I feel great about it, because in any war, the most important aspect of any war and the motivation of the people who are fighting in that war, often people are fighting for their freedom, for their very existence, if they're being invaded and destroyed. And that's exactly what's happening to the West. And it's exactly what's happening to much of the world under the control of the West, which is an enemy of not just other countries like Russia or countries around the world in South America, Africa, Asia, but it's an enemy of the European people. And this is what's so amazing about all this, is that one of the biggest parts of any war is the mental aspect of a war. Napoleon said that the mental was to the physical in a war is 3-1. And I believe that. And what we're seeing right now is the Jewish narrative of Jewish holiness, exceptionalism, superiority, sacredness is collapsing. People are understanding that this is not a genocide just of Israel. It's not a genocide of Israelis, by the way. Israelis don't identify themselves as Israelis. What they identify themselves is as Jews. They identify themselves as Jews. And they demand, in fact, every country say the Jewish state of Israel. And it is a Jewish state. And it's based on a religion that is the closest religion in the world, based not just on the Hollywood version of Nazism, which isn't really the real version of National Socialism of Germany. It's the exact worst possible version that Hollywood wants to present of their German enemies from the war, the National Socialists were their enemies. It is like the worst vile propaganda. The interesting thing is there's so many Jews now, even in Israel and around the world, and other non-Jews who are realizing that these people and the state of Israel and the Jews that populate Israel are far worse, and this is what they're saying, they're worse than the Nazis. And the one reason why I can say that they're worse than the Nazis, or whatever they describe as Nazis, is because Nazis and Germans would never speak, German leaders would never ever, and they didn't, they would have never said this during the Second World War, even in that struggle, even while Germans are being firebombed and burned alive in their homes, women and children. But it's okay to kill Nazi babies, right? Because that's what the Jews told us in Israel. Just like they said it's okay to kill Palestinian babies. But the interesting thing was, there's nothing comparable from any German leaders ever saying this. And that kind of shows you the lies that they presented, not just about the whole Palestine thing, but the lies they've been telling for 150 years, 125 years, certainly. And in terms of the war, we can go back to the 1930s when the National Socialists came to power, because the ethic of Germany was a very different ethic than the popular ethic of Israel. Because, and as some Jews have pointed out, the Nazis would have never said it's okay to kill Jewish babies and children and burn them alive. To say we burn the Nazi babies alive, so why shouldn't we burn the Palestinian babies alive? Because the Germans had a very different ethic that they taught their people. They were a Christian nation. Fact. That is a absolute fact. They weren't like the Soviet nation, which was anti-Christian, anti-God, which was run by Jewish supremacists, just like the supremacists of Israel, really. They called it communism. And their con was that they were going to help all the people of the world. And, you know, they actually were in favor of, you know, the average person getting a fair shake. But it really wasn't about that. The truth is that communism was financed by super rich oligarch Jews, billionaire Jews, even for those times, who literally saw communism, which they supported. Why would international capitalist bankers support a communist ideology, which allegedly looked at bankers like the biggest enemies? The capitalist bankers is the biggest enemies of humankind. But, you know, but they're going to be supporting communism? No, it was because communism was a Jewish conspiracy, if you hate to use that. I hate to use that word. It was pretty open, actually. The Jews led communism. It was Jewish-led from top to bottom from the very beginning. And even Winston Churchill wrote about that, a man that is praised as one of the greatest people in the world because he helped bring us the Second World War, which, by the way, was not a great and wonderful war. It didn't save humanity. It was the biggest exercise of inhumanity and mass murder and destruction of the lives of the innocent of any war in all history. And we've had nothing but endless war since that time. That war could have been avoided and should have been avoided. And if you think about the beginning of that war, which ultimately killed anywhere from 55 million, considering different historians that would estimate the death toll, and not only that, it's not just the people who died, hundreds of millions suffered. Hundreds of millions of people lost their homes. There are millions of people who were ethnically cleansed from their lands, like for instance, the Germans of East Prussia. Millions, 11 million Germans were kicked out. And most of the women of that country and much of Eastern Europe were raped by the Soviet troops, urged on by the Jewish propagandists like Ilya Ehrenberg, who was head of the propaganda of the Russian army. Talk about, you know, war crimes. Talk about genocide. My God. And then you look at the mass murders of the Soviet Union and the Jews. They killed 20 to 30 million. That's even admitted by Jews like Applebaum, you know, the Jewish historian. And then you look at things like what happened in Ukraine, 7 to 11 million Ukrainians. But the entire narrative has been controlled by Jews. But now people are getting it. And here's the shocking thing. And this is what I think is the most powerful kind of it's a cognitive dissonance, actually, dissonance in the sense that the truth is the Nazis as portrayed by Hollywood, people who were trying to conquer the world, the people who were trying, who were torturing and murderous and aggressive. The Germans, the war got started over the fact that the Germans simply wanted the German people of the city of Danzig, which was a German city, 95% German, that was taken from Germany by the Versailles Treaty, a very disgusting and hypocritical thing, because the whole idea of the whole Versailles Treaty, in fact, this whole idea of the war and the League of Nations was self-determination of all people and all that stuff. But all that went by the wayside because Germans were going to be held hostage by another country, Poland. And I understand there's obviously competition between Poland and Germany has been historically. But the Germans have been living where they were living for hundreds and hundreds of years. And these were German territories. And they were taken from Germany. And these Germans were made to live in, so to speak, a bondage in another country that hated them. And then you had the country of Germany literally cindered in two spheres where they couldn't even, they didn't even have a land bridge or land roads to connecting the two parts of Germany from Middle Germany, not even was, you know, what we call East Germany was Middle Germany, which was taken from Germany, where you didn't even have a road connecting West Germany, Middle Germany, and East Germany, Prussia. And Prussia was ethnically cleansed by the Soviets, the Soviet Jews. You can't make this up. And Hitler said, these Germans shouldn't be programmed. They have the right of self-determination. And if you believe in any sort of democracy, that should happen. And there became a conflict between Poland. It was a conflict that was really begun by France and England. Instead of saying we should have diplomacy, and these Germans certainly have a right to self-determination, if you believe in democracy, they all should. Germany was not aggressive to any other country. The Sudetenland was 90% German. They voted to go to Germany. Alsace-Lorraine was all part of traditional Germany, which was also taken unjustly from the German people, you know, from the end of this, the First World War. And Germany was put under, was blamed for the entire war, even though every historian knows the First World War was based on entangling alliances. And Germany wasn't trying to conquer the world or anything in the First World War. Yet, in spite of their losing this war, in spite of the economic catastrophe that took place in the country, people starving, Germany was then saddled with destruction of their industries, which were dismantled by the Allies and shipped over to France and Britain and other countries. And they wanted Germany to suffer, and they wanted Germany to go bankrupt. And you know why that happened, my friend? Dave, the reason why that happened, and everybody listening, I want you to listen to this. This happened because a lot of the people in the world, the Jewish elements in the world, which had a lot of influence in media even then, even the New York Times then was Jewish controlled, and they were supporting the rise of communism. And Jews all over the world were supporting the communist movement worldwide. And they supported the communist movement, by the way, until the late 40s, early 50s, when the Russians began to seize back control of the country from the Jewish communists that ruled it. Once the Jews were disposed in Russia, it was only a matter of time when communism itself was going to fall and the Christian church was going to be reestablished. Again, folks, Russia is not a communist country. You'd think it was, according to the media. No, it's an anti-communist country.
Dave, we're filling up.
Yeah, we're filling up. We're good. But the point is, just getting to the point, the interesting
thing, it's 21 after.
The shocking thing is that, and I'll just close with this. The shocking thing is that Nazism is not dead. Not the Nazism that they describe in Hollywood media. The ultimate racism, the ultimate murder, right. The ultimate criminality.
The fantasy. The ultimate what they
genocide.
Created out of whole cloth. Right.
Nazism is alive and well in the state of Israel. It's alive and well in the United States of America, really, right. Under the Jewish Nazis that are running this country and creating these endless wars and are destroying humanity. They're truly strong.
And how does it feel, Dave?
It feels, I feel tragedy in the sense. I wish in so many ways that I wouldn't have been right all these years, because it's sad that I am right in the sense of what's happening to this country. We have the governments of Europe destroying Europe and the European people. We have the government of the United States destroying the American people. We have the government of Poland destroying the Polish people. We have the government of Germany, my God, destroying the
right. Germany. But how do you feel about it? That's what I'm asking.
I feel
that you were right. Like I mean, it's happening.
I was right, but you know what? I don't feel any joy about being right. I do feel a sense of satisfaction that I wish my warnings had been listened to, and I wish that maybe somehow I was more effective. But I was truly a David standing up against the Goliath, you know, in the sense of the media.
You were effective, buddy. Let's get to the calls, and we'll come back to this.
All right.
Okay.
You got it.
Catherine, you there?
Oh, hi. Give me a second. Let me get to the phone. Hi, can you hear me? There's like a delay. I'm listening on my computer and I'm on here.
Yeah, can you pause that on the computer?
I'm just going to walk away from it. How is everybody doing?
Okay.
Fine, how are you doing?
Go ahead. What's your question or comment?
I hear myself. Well, one thing I want to bring up that I've heard some people talking about but not others is the in England, Sam Malio, Laura Talbert's husband, the judge put him in jail for 2 years for something that the judge admitted was not a crime.
Yeah.
But he put him in jail because the judge said he knew what he was thinking. So it's like the pre-crime, like enemy of the state, pre-crime. I mean,
precog and Minority
Report.
Well,
here's the crime.
Oh, the Minority Report.
There was a crime. The crime was the judge that kidnapped this man from his family, from his children, from his life, that made them not as financially viable to pay their bills, put food on the table, pay their rent, pay their whatever tasks they had. The taking the love of a father from his wife and children, taking, you know, their love from him, kidnapping him for doing what? For defending fundamentally the fundamental human rights of his own people. He got put in prison because he did stickers such as "White Lives Matter." They told us that Black Lives Matter, that's perfectly fine because Black lives do matter. But for some reason, the judge ruled that white lives don't matter. So he's going to go to jail because he said white lives matter. He's going to go to jail because he said it's okay to be white. Like, maybe it's okay. It's not terrible and a horrible thing to be white and to fight against this massive hate. And that's what's ironic to me about this whole thing with Israel right now, because what they're doing is they're trying to compare Israel to white racism. But the same Jews that support Israel and support this mass genocide of Israel against the Palestinians, the same Jews that support these wars after wars after wars for Jewish hegemony in this world, like the Ukrainian murder of hundreds of thousands of a whole Ukrainian generation because they hate the Russians and they want to inflict pain upon the Russians. And they also actually also hate the Ukrainians. Just go to My Jewish Learning, go to major Jewish websites, and they'll tell you about how evil the Cossacks are. The Cossacks are the national symbol of Ukraine. Their national anthem is about Cossacks. Everything's about Cossacks. Jews write that Cossacks are the most murderous, horrific anti-Semites ever. But you know what? The Jews that run America and the Jews that run Ukraine, the Jewish presidents, the Jewish oligarchs that steal the country blind, these are the same Jews that are massacring the Ukrainian people along with the Russian people. This is not a war for Ukraine. This is a war started by the Jews who took over Ukraine. This is a war that cost the lives of 14,000.
Dave, she asked about Sam Malia.
Yeah, well, I know, but I'm just going
into I know, it. but we're lined up.
So we
gotta
go. I just wanted to put it into a framework.
Right.
That there is a war, a Jewish war, and it's not, I don't care whether the judge is a Jew or not. There's a lot of collaborators. I mean, there were a lot of collaborators in Moorish Spain. There was a lot of collaborators when Malta was controlled by the Muslims. There were collaborators in the Ottoman Empire when they went all the way to the walls of Vienna, right? But these are collaborators because this whole war and this hatred against Europeans has been launched by Jews. And they hate Europeans just as much as they hate Palestinians. They hate all of humanity. But they saw the Europeans to control the power and the media, and which controls the world in many ways, and to control the military of America, which controls the world in every other way. They had to replace the Europeans and take over European countries. And they did that by demonizing Europeans and organizing a conflict and a replacement of Europeans by this massive immigration to which to take over the European lands, take over the world by controlling. As Dr. Slattery says it, this is the best way to end this little spot, is to say, Dr. Slattery says it this way, the Jews are riding the zombie corpse of the Western world to world domination. They're riding the zombie corpse of the Western world, world domination.
He better not call again tonight. Catherine, thanks. We'll get you back in.
All right.
Okay, let's bring in Jimmy. Jimmy, you got the floor, buddy.
All right. How you guys doing? Thanks, Dave and Dr. Dave Duke. Hey, I guess you guys noticed what happened up in South Dakota with Chris, with the governor there signing worse hate crime laws into effect than even DeSantis did. And, you know, anyway, I pick up there. It's interesting. But I think World War II was a sin by England, France, and USA against Germany. And they're all now taken over and run by Jews.
It was the greatest crime in the history of humanity. The greatest bloodletting that ever existed. And it was a bloodletting, a mass bloodletting and murder of innocents of both sides. There were a lot of innocent Russians that died, a hell of a lot of innocent Germans that died, Frenchmen, Belgium people throughout Europe, Italians, British, lots of people who died. And this was a war that could have been and should have been avoided. And it could have been solved with diplomacy. And anybody that says it was worth it, like I heard Piers Morgan say the other day, the guy is an idiot. The guy is nuts. And he's a psychopath. Because how in the world could anyone say not allowing the German people of Danzig to vote democratically and run their own lives in their own society, in their own city, how could they say not allowing them to have those democratic rights after 25 years of oppression, after 25 years of absolutely being kidnapped from their own country? How in the world does that justify the death of at least 70? I think most historians, I think the average idea of the deaths of the Second World War is at least 65 to 70 million people. And then hundreds of millions more injured, harmed, dislocated, churches gone, homes gone, libraries, schools, society. I mean, you can't make it up. Anybody who thinks that war is a great thing that it happened has got to be psychopathic. He's certainly not cognizant in any way. He doesn't have any brain. He doesn't have any heart. Well, he has no feelings.
Dave, at the same time, these people that are called these Jews and useful idiots that are calling everybody anti-Semitic, they're actually then for Jewish supremacy.
Of course they are.
And of course, and killing innocent people in Gaza. It's like, you know, this Christine Noem girl, she thinks that they're still God's chosen people. I mean, it's like, how could she be so stupid up there in South Dakota?
But I was listening to some, I'll share something with you in the audience.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was listening to a really fine interview with Glenn Greenwald, and I was also listening to an interview he did with another talk show host with Roger Waters. And you know, when I was a kid, I really liked Roger Waters' music, Pink Floyd. I really liked the music in The Wall. I liked a lot of things he did, just like the sound of it. I liked his creative talents. And I didn't know much about him. I knew he was on the left side of the equation. But the interesting thing was that over time, I agree with a lot of people who I used to disagree with in terms of leftist ideology, because I came to realize that war itself can be the greatest evil, more so than the enemies we face. When I was young, I thought, well, like Patton said, that we should go on ahead and attack the Soviet Union. Thank God we didn't. We had enough Europeans die in the Second World War, both Russians and Germans. And I value the Russian people just like the German people. I value the European people. Of course, I imagine I value people that are like me and my family and the heritage I represent. Obviously, it's just like people support their own team or they support in their own traditions. They support their own faith. This is normal. This is normal humanity. And those loyalties exist all over the world with every race, every heritage, every culture. But there's a difference between a nationalist idea, like America was a nationalist country, even though we had the same blood and traditions and heritage and language as our British forebears. We actually believed that we in America, long way from Great Britain, had a right to have a government in specifically our interest, not in the interest of the, quote, British Empire, but in the interest of our own country, our own people, that was close to the interests of the people, not some king or some leader or tyrant in another country. And I think most people do that. And I do believe that that was a fundamental principle of what National Socialism was. I don't agree with everything the National Socialists did, for sure. But National Socialism, it did celebrate its own people. So the other day I saw Piers Morgan, and he's on there talking about, amazing. In fact, I saw Roger Waters talking about this, and there's one thing I would disagree with Roger Waters on. And he was talking about how that, well, this is one thing I'll agree with him on first. He identifies Israel as a Jewish Nazi state. I mean, he said this repeatedly on a very recent broadcast, which is great. And it's genius because it's true. Now, again, Nazism is what they call National Socialism. But remember, Hollywood National Socialism, or Nazism is what they call it, the Hollywood version of Nazis, is the very worst projection they can do of a country they consider their enemy. Now, why was Germany their enemy? Because Germany said that communism was an evil organization. Communism was an evil construction by Jews for world domination. Even Winston Churchill wrote that, not just David Duke, right? And it wasn't just Adolf Hitler. Winston Churchill wrote it. Read his article called Zionism versus Communism, A Struggle for the Soul of the Jewish People. And in this, he says that Leon Trotsky and the Jewish communists envision communism as a way for Jews to control the world. This is the reality of it. And that's who were the real people trying to take over the world in the last century. It wasn't the Germans. They weren't trying to take over the world. And the other day, Piers Morgan got up on his show, and he said, he talked to this one Arab guy. And the Arab guy said, well, do you support, you know, the killing of German babies? In the Second World War, do you think that it was right for the Allies, and the Allies started this campaign of murdering the babies of the German people, burning them alive along with their mothers in against the civilian population. Do you think that was right? And Pierce Morgan said, yes, of course, because Hitler was trying to destroy the world. Come on, destroy the world? No, the people who were destroying the world were the ones that created a world war and the ones who have been destroying the world ever since. The Jews, who are the ultimate supremacists, and we'll talk about this later in the show, but we're going to go into Judaism and talk about Judaism as nothing more than the most radical presentation of Nazism the world's ever seen. It's a presentation where the non-Jewish people of the world are nothing more than animals, and that's exactly the way Israel describes, not just the Palestinians, but every non-Jew in the world. And I'm telling you the truth, folks, and I will back it up tonight in the program.
Thanks, Jimmy. But they don't even want us to have the right to the truth and facts. They're trying to make that illegal and no defense.
You're right. Thanks, Jimmy. We'll get you back in.
Of course, because they can't stand the truth because they're afraid of the truth.
And Dave, let me read this to you.
They're over in terms of their power.
Yeah, of course. This is what Jimmy was talking about, and you heard about it, I'm sure.
Right.
The bill adopting the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm.
You did hear about that, right, Dave?
Go ahead, read it.
Yeah. So she signed it into law. Okay. So this Noam, who is considered one of the front runners for Trump's, vice president. So this was 4 days ago. Today, Governor Kristi Noem signed HB 1076, which requires the consideration of the definition of anti-Semitism when investigating unfair or discriminatory practices into law. Okay? So let's read what the definition is. It's really short, because guess what? It's a working definition. So she signed a bill into law based on a working definition of HolocaustRemembrance.com, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. And here's the working definition of anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred toward Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Rhetorical and physical manifestations of anti-Semitism are directed toward Jewish or non-Jewish individuals and or their property, toward Jewish community institutions and religious facilities. So forget about the First Amendment, right?
Yeah. Forget about the First Amendment. I'd like to share with you and the audience.
Yeah.
The exact statement issued by the governor that says more than anything I could say.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it proves exactly what the point we're making. All right. She actually issued a statement, said, ensuring, this is the title of it from Governor Kristi Noem, ensuring the security of God's chosen people. And when you just start, you just can't make this up, right? Now, Christians have often said that in the Bible, God's chosen people were Jews. But we had a new covenant when Jesus Christ came. And at that point, God's chosen people became anyone who accepted the salvation of Jesus Christ and the love of Jesus Christ, right? And the principles of Jesus Christ was about peace and love. Blessed are the peacemakers, by the way, is what Jesus Christ said. But it's called anti-Semitism, by the way, is what they put on the buildings in New York City when they said, a ceasefire in Gaza, stopping the murder of tens of thousands, murder and maiming of tens of thousands of the children of Gaza. That's anti-Semitism. And it's securing the supremacy of God's chosen people. This is what she says. She's putting Jews ahead of everyone. When I was growing up, my dad would always gather our family together and we would pray for Israel. Can you imagine this? Now, when my family got together and we would pray, my father was a very devout Christian. He was an engineer and a scientist, but also a Christian, taught Sunday school. And we would pray quite often as a family, next to my parents' bed or my bed or my sister's bed. And we'd pray, right? He would pray for America and for our family and for those that we love. And this is what she writes. When I was growing up, my dad would always gather our family together and we would pray for Israel. It was instilled in me from a very young age that the Jews were God's chosen people and that Israel was the Holy Land. No. Whatever you think the Jews were, they certainly, when Christ came and they crucified him and they broke the laws of God, as it says in Deuteronomy, when they said, quote, the Old Testament says, as long as you obey my commandments and you obey my words, you'll be my people. But if you don't obey me and obey my words and my beliefs, I will requite you instantly. And the rejection of Jesus Christ, according to the New Testament, this woman says she believes in as a Christian, that she says that she reveres Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ, the words he said against the Jewish elite, the Jewish Pharisees who ran the oral tradition of Judaism, Christ and God, in bringing Jesus Christ to the earth, was to make clear to humanity that Jewish law, the way that Judaism had gone, was against God because he went against all of humanity. He went against 99.8% of humanity by supporting the Jewish element, which actually was persecuting and murdering Christians and opposing Jesus Christ, crucified Jesus Christ. I mean, you can't make these things up. So then she goes on to say, she says, she's all worried about the safety of Christians going to school. What do you think the Palestinians, you know, almost half the Palestinians originally were Christians. It was only since the foundation of Israel that there were fewer and fewer Christians. And that's what destroyed. And by the way, Christian churches were burned by the hundreds by the Jews in Palestine, along with mosques and so forth. And Jews have supported laws in Israel against Christianity and put Christians in prison. There's a law in Israel that anybody that proselytizes for Jesus Christ can go to prison for 5 years.
I want to move there, Dave.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Let's all move to Israel.
Right. You don't have a law like that in Syria against Christians. It's 4 million Syrians. And Assad protects Syrians.
What else did she say, Dave, in the letter?
Huh? Well, she says so much. She says, I'm very proud HBO 107 is a very important bill to combat anti-Semitism. The bill defines anti-Semitism and makes it easier to prove when discriminatory conduct is motivated by anti-Semitism. It's an impactful piece of legislation to ensure the safety of Jewish people. No, we have laws in America where no one is put above anybody else. The safety of everyone. If somebody commits a violent crime,
that's changing,
against
Dave.
Anyone, right?
Dave, that's changing.
No, this is making Jews more important than any other people.
Well, yeah, listen to this last paragraph.
Yeah, let's listen to it.
From this article, right? And then we got to go to the next call.
Go ahead.
Earlier this month, Georgia became the latest U.S. state to pass legislation applying IHRA's guidance to state law. 33 U.S. states have as well, including Virginia, Texas, New York, and Florida. They're all using the guidelines, the working definition of anti-Semitism. 33 states.
You know, they don't ever put the guidelines in there.
Soon that will be 50.
Because if they put the guidelines in there, it says, see, they speak in these terms. This is how we live in this clown world. We live in a world where there's no truth and everything's disinformation,
right? It's a joke.
Because they don't tell us that what the guidelines say is anything they construe as being critical of Jews.
Holocaust denial, too.
Critical of Israel, right? Or even questioning a historical event like the Holocaust.
Yep.
Anything that does
You mean a historical non-event.
It makes it a crime. It makes it against the law.
It's an historical non-event.
Which is a violation of the Constitution of the United States.
Exactly.
And the most important amendment and the most important words in the entire Constitution of the United States, the most important words are the First Amendment, when it guarantees freedom of speech and thought.
Dave, let's get to the next
religion.
Call. Ready?
And by the way, freedom of religion also should enable you to discuss when a religion becomes something that is against humanity.
To discuss whatever the hell you want.
Exactly.
Die, Jews.
Like Judaism, which all Judaism, folks, is the most extreme version of Nazism that could ever be portrayed on the screen.
Exactly.
It's a celebration of mass murder. It's a celebration of genocide. It's a celebration of Jews ruling over all the other people. It's a celebration of Jewish hegemony over the world. It's a celebration of...
It's a death cult.
It absolutely is.
All right, Dave,
and
let's bring in Michael.
And it's the ultimate racial supremacism on the
earth.
And that's
everything you've said for all of these decades, for six decades...
Right.
It's 100% right. Michael, go ahead, buddy. You got the floor. Tell us how California is falling apart. Tell us about how Adam Schiff won the primary.
Yeah, Adam Schiff is what I call him.
We're rolling tonight.
Adam guy is the most vile human being I can think of. And Steve Garvey is running against him, who is an All-American baseball player. And, anyway...
When I look at him, it's like I'm looking. It's like you're looking into the eyes of Satan. I mean,
he's vile.
You get the most creepy
vile.
Feeling in the world.
He might be our senator out here in California. He's got all the Jew money behind him.
No, not might, Michael. It's a Democrat district. He's going to win.
Right. Yeah. Trump, wait a minute. Trump said finish the job with Palestine. So he's not on our side. He said finish the job.
That's
finish
terrible.
The genocide.
He said that.
So the orange man's out. He's going to save no one. It's Biden and orange man are just as bad. Not to be trusted. Totally in the pocket of Jewish finance capital.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think
Dr. Duke.
I agree with everything you said there, but at the same time, sometimes you have to make certain pragmatic decisions of who is going to do more harm to the country quicker. And I think that this is a consideration. I'm not saying who I'm going to vote for yet. I don't know. But I can tell you this, that I don't think the country can take four more years of Biden. I know if Biden comes in, if we had 6 million come in, during his 3 years now, three a little bit more than 3 years.
20 million.
Yeah, we'll have 20 more. And that will lead to so many deaths in our country, so much vileness, so much tyranny.
Dr. Duke.
So sometimes we have to make pragmatic decisions, but so we have to consider everything we do because votes do matter, even when we don't have a good choice. Sometimes you have to make a decision that is more important for what you think is in terms of the critical things facing us. So I don't know.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So yeah, Dr. Duke, my question is, when you were growing up and you got involved with the Klan, what did your parents think? What was your parents' feeling with your activism as a young man? How did they react?
It wasn't pretty. Actually, they were concerned about me. They actually, because I always discussed my politics with my father, was very political. He was a strong conservative Republican, and my mother and others. I was discussing politics almost every day of my life. It seemed by the time I was 12 years old, I realized what was going on. I realized the takeover of America, and so over this time period, I made a lot of impact on my father, and I don't think he had any that much objection because he knew that I was joining a nonviolent Klan group. And he knew that I wasn't going to involve myself in any violence, which I never have, that I've always condemned violence. He just figured it was going to make my life a lot harder. And it was going to perhaps lessen my ability to make serious changes for the country because of the way the Klan was presented by the media and the image, the container, so to speak. All the Klan was an organization, which is, by the way, had millions and millions of members in America at one time. They had many United States senators, many congressmen. President Truman himself was a Klansman in his early days, and other presidents were. Many presidents of the United States, you know, commended the Klan for saving the South, like Woodrow Wilson did, even though Wilson ultimately sold out the country in other ways. But, so, you know, and I'll tell you something. This is an honest confession, right? The reason why that I got involved in the Klan was because there were other groups that were standing up for white people, per se. The Citizens Council, for instance, was one. And that's where I first learned the truth about race. I got involved in the Klan because the Klan, I thought, was the most honest organization about the Jewish problem in America, that recognized Jewish supremacism, that recognized the threat that Jews were, because at a very young age, by the time I was 13, 14 years old, I understood the fact that the reason why America was headed toward hell was because, not because of the fact that blacks were going to lead it to hell. No, it was because Jews were controlling the country. And they were undermining the values of America, undermining our immigration policy, undermining our very concept of ourselves, producing hate propaganda to make our people hate themselves, dividing people in every way they could to try to conquer us and destroy us, and use the power of America to take over the world. These are the things that I began to understand as a young man. We're talking about in the early 60s. And the only group that I saw that was openly standing up on the Jewish question was the KKK. Now, I joined a nonviolent group, and I always condemn violence. In fact, in my group, when I became head of my organization, we had about 10,000 members or so, more than that, actually. And there was never a single member of my group that was ever charged with a violent crime against any minority. And I initiated the idea that we put into our oath that you would not conspire or you would not commit any violent acts against any minorities or any people. You know, that, you know, in fact, we put that right in the beginning of the oath, because that's how important it was in my mind to keep this idea of nonviolence. Now, looking back on it in all these years, maybe my father was right. But at the same time, I have no shame for joining this group, because no shame at all, because I absolutely believed that I was telling the truth and that I was working for true human rights. And even when I was in the Klan, I actually stood up and said, I believed in equal rights for all, the best qualified to get the job or the promotion or the scholarship. If we're in America, we should all have the same rights as Americans to fundamentally go as far as our talents and ability warrant, especially when we all pay taxes or whatever. At the same time, I did believe that it was the right of our people to protect our borders, to have immigration laws, and to protect our heritage in the country our forefathers built, knowing that we had the right to survive and exist as a people like any other people in the world do. But that's a big difference from that to what Israel is. Israel is a genocidal country, and it's not an apartheid state. Apartheid state would be a two-state solution, actually. That's what apartheid was meant to be by Verwoerd of South Africa. The truth is that Israel is not an apartheid state. It's not a traditional colonial state. It's far more genocidal than anything white people ever did.
But supremacist state. Let's call it a supremacist state.
Exactly, and a genocidal state, too. I mean, yeah. It's a state about killing everyone.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Dugan.
Murderous
thank
impression.
You. Yep.
Thank right. you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Michael. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Yeah.
All right.
Dave? And they are the Nazis. This we have Nazism running the world right now, or at least
absolutely. 100%. Dave, we have a couple minutes before that. No, it's not. Could you imagine if he would have won? We have a couple of minutes before the top of the hour break. Did you hear that Ireland rejected the government bid to change the constitution to widen the definition of family to include families which are not based on marriage?
Interesting.
Yeah. So 67.7% voted no in the referendum. Irish Prime Minister received a humiliating defeat. Voters also rejected a proposal to cancel women from the Constitution. So this is like, Dave, this is like a global attempt by organized international Jewry to completely rework white Western countries. And I think, well, I know we're seeing the pushback now, right?
That's right.
And I think it's our time, right?
Well, you know, it's that the whole world is understanding that we live in a fraudulent society. We have a fraudulent lying media. We have completely disjointed, a completely dysfunctional, a completely ignorant, a completely lying presentation of the world every day on so many substance, so many things of substance and importance to us. The thing that they most celebrate is the Second World War. That the Second World War, as anybody who studies history knows, was the beginning of the end of Europe. It was a death knell for Europe. It was brought upon by a lot of Jewish influence all over the world, Jewish money, Jewish banking. They declared war on Germany in 1934. In fact, that's done in the Daily Express in Great Britain, for instance, where they said Judea declares war on Germany. They worked very hard to get us into a war. And this was a war that cost millions upon millions of lives, cost a lot of Jewish lives, too. And I do believe, as Patrick Buchanan said very eloquently in his book, The Unnecessary War, that it cost, you know, as far as what they call the Holocaust and what whatever the Holocaust was, you know, I think that it's certainly valid for people to examine it, study it, and be allowed to debate it. And do research on it without being threatened to go to prison for the rest of your lives.
Dave, top of the hour break.
Good.
Dave, top of the hour break. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Okay, folks, it is 7 o'clock Central Time. Feels like 6 o'clock, and there's a reason for that, right? Daylight Savings Time. You're listening to the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on SpeakFreeRadio.com, and we are going into the second hour. And we are going to get our next bunch of callers. They're lined up, and let's get them. Dave, that was 1933, right? When Judea declared war. I think it was 1933 because the great one, I mean Adolf Hitler, came into power on January 30, right? He was appointed chancellor on January 30, 1933, and so Judea is not going to wait till the next year to declare war. They're going to declare war right away. And I got a message from one of the listeners. Yeah. It was March 24.
Yeah.
So Judea waited a couple of months. Hey, wait a second. That's coming up. The anniversary. Oh, wait. The 90-year anniversary just passed last year. But anyway, yeah. So it was 1933. Yeah. Thank you, Judea. All right. Let's bring in some more callers, Dave. We've got our good friend Russ. Russ, go ahead, buddy. The floor is yours.
David, I read the Israel Lobby, the book by John Mearsheimer, and lately I haven't read anything by him, but I've seen him on Piers Morgan and a couple other interviews where he gives his opinions about war in Ukraine. I'm wondering how you feel about, have you heard him on that subject and what you think of what he has to say?
He makes incredible good sense about the war in Ukraine, and he's right on every point. It, the whole presentation of this war is nothing but a big lie. And it's not just the Jewish, it's not just the Israeli lobby, by the way. And I do feel like the title of the book is, in a way, disinformation, because it's not simply an Israeli lobby, the Israel lobby or Israeli lobby. It's a Jewish lobby. And it's important to understand that we have to identify whose lobby this is and what this lobby is for. And this lobby is about Jewish supremacy, supremacy over American policy, supremacy over Jewish, you know, over Jewish banking that dominates and robs blind America. I mean, Goldman Sachs is the biggest predator criminal bank in the world. They were literally convicted, as we've talked about in the show many times, of a $4.5 billion international criminal conspiracy that bankrupted a whole country and their educational system and their medical system. The country of Malaysia. This is a black mark. And Goldman Sachs did not only just commit great crimes against Malaysia, which would disqualify them for anything and enable them to be sanctioned and criminalized. They shouldn't be able to give $1 to American politicians. They've been the biggest single contributor over the last 70 years in American politics. But they should be banned from any commerce in the United States. They literally have been found guilty of like 37 different frauds. And they've been fined, listen to this, almost $8 billion in fines. But guess how much money they've gotten from the Federal Reserve Bank, which prints the American money, the taxpayers' money, and then gives it to whatever Jewish bank they want to give it to use it as part of their interest policy, as part of their ability to loan money on it, which gives them unlimited amount to make money. And they literally have gotten, in terms of, you know, denominated digital money from the Federal Reserve of, it's hard to believe this, but over $850 billion, which, I mean, you can't make this up. So they got fined a few billion, and they've been given 800 and something billion. This is the kind of robbery on a massive scale that Jews have always involved in, even since the days of the Rothschilds. This is no joke. But so it's not the Israeli lobby, it's the Jewish lobby.
If he had called his book, though, The Jewish Lobby, he probably would have lost his.
Well, that's right. And that's maybe pragmatism. But he should explain this, at least when he does a program. And he should explain, there's a lot of problems in his book and a lot of problems in the whole discussion of this Jewish lobby that I correct in my videos, and I correct it in my talks and radio programs and discussions and debates and everything, that the truth is that the so-called Israeli lobby, which is AIPAC, American Israel Public Affairs Committee, that this lobby is only the smallest tip of the iceberg of real Jewish power in America. Because the lobby just gives a few small number, a few million dollars in terms of the Senate and the Congress. But it controls the contributions of more than $1 billion every election cycle. Like more than that.
Because can
I explain to you how that works? Because what it does is it has a list of billionaire Jews who have the ability to give more money than AIPAC to a single candidate if they want. Some of them give like Sheldon Adelson gave $100 billion to Trump. You know, Marcus gave tens of millions of dollars to Trump. Then you had Hillary Clinton, 18 of the 20 biggest billionaire contributors, you know, biggest billionaire Jewish contributors to the real power in politics in America, you know, was 18 out of 20 of those contributors. Now, those people didn't have to go through AIPAC. They didn't give money to AIPAC, then AIPAC gave it to them. No, AIPAC sets it up. So they just tell the billionaire they need to give this guy 5 million or 10 million or 20 billion, million or whatever they need. That's our task. And then the billionaire Jews give the money out. So AIPAC is much more powerful than even what it's described by the, you know, some of the anti-AIPAC story. I've never heard one time a Michigan, which I'm, you know, sorry for, sorry that I haven't heard this, ever explained to them how this works. They've never explained to them. It's not just the money that AIPAC gives legislators. He talks about that. But it's also the fact that they allocate the money, and the power of AIPAC is far more than would be seen to be obvious by a lot.
AIPAC is the quarterback, right, Dave?
Yeah.
They're not a lot. Yeah.
Well, AIPAC is.
They line up the groups who actually give the money. Russ, what was your other question?
AIPAC's the coach. They're not really the team.
They're the quarterback and the coach, right. Russ?
Trump recently mentioned his list of vice presidential considerations. He'll probably pick, I figure, that Tim Scott. I was wondering, I think Tulsi Gabbard might be a better choice. I'd like to know your opinion on that.
Well, I'm disappointed by what Tulsi did recently. Dr. Slattery and I both liked a lot of her positions. I mean, she's certainly been right on Syria and other questions, but she's really caved to the Jews as much as Trump has recently. I would much rather see someone like Tucker Carlson, because I think Tucker Carlson would be a break on Trump doing more of these Jewish wars, because I don't think Trump's in favor of the policies we have right now in Israel or the policies we have in Ukraine at all. And I think that Trump would speak out. For that reason, I don't think that Trump will appoint him, because the Jews will really just go against Trump all the way if he appoints Tucker, because they see Tucker as an existential threat to them. They also might see Trump as a threat, too, by the way.
Ramaswamy actually said that if he had his way, we wouldn't be sending Israel any more money after this current batch runs out. I think he'd actually be my number one. He came up kind of a BS answer to the Israel question, but he bottom line, he said Israel should be doing for its supporting itself. We shouldn't be sending any money or weapons.
Right. Well, you know, who knows? I mean, all I know is that we've got to have some more truth on the Jewish question. If we don't have that, we have no salvation in our future.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Hello? Y'all there?
Hello, I can hear you.
Well, Dave, are you there?
Dave is here. Dave was dumb. He was muted. And I said, Catherine, we got you back in. We went around the horn. Went around the horn. Do you have a question or comment, Catherine?
Oh, give me more of a warning. Let me see.
All right, we'll bring it back in. Just write something in the chat. All right, we got rid of Catherine. We're going to bring in Jimmy. No warning, Jimmy. Question or comment.
Problem. Hey, I got a simple one for either one of you guys. What's the best sites that you guys like to go to get Jew information? Because I'm addicted to it, you know. So
I like Money Tree Publishing, for one thing.
Sure. I'm always on that.
And I like, you know, I actually do enjoy the Daily Stormer a bit, I must admit. Sometimes I have some disagreements with what they say, but he's got a lot of good information. There are a lot of people that are supporting him by sending in good information from Jewish sources and Jewish publications that he publishes and shares. So I think it's a great publication. He has some pretty good insights on things. I'm not saying we agree at every point all along the way, but I think anybody that exposes the Jews as well as they do, I think is, I like them.
Get you back in, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Let's bring in Nick. He's got a question. And I missed Robert from Yuma. I'm sorry about that, Robert. We'll get you in a second, buddy. Okay, Nick, go ahead.
I'm more important than Robert. I got a more important.
Oh, hold on. Hold on, man, now, son.
I got a more important question than Robert, I'm sure.
Well, we'll see. Robert's got like 50,000 notes that he's been keeping since he was 3 years old of Dr. Duke. So he knows exactly what's going on.
This is a quick question because I just came across this group yesterday from a guy that I'm going to do an interview with on Tuesday. Doctor, have you ever heard of the National Socialist Movement?
Of course, I've heard that over the years here.
Okay. What do you know about them? I put their link of their website on the chat. But
well, I don't know. I really can't speak. I don't know that much about them.
In parentheses, you know, they put American Nazi Party.
So yeah, you know, again,
is that Colucci?
I'm not saying that they're doing anything wrong. If they want to present whatever they want to, fine. I don't think that makes sense in American politics, because if you really have a party and you're trying to get elected and you're trying to have a mass movement, I think putting up a swastika or calling it a Nazi party or something like that is not. In fact, I don't even like the term Nazi. I think Nazi is a very pejorative term. It was created by Jews. It's like using a disjoiner, right? For a
shipmate Dave. Yes, it is Colucci. I just look at
about. But Nazi was used by the National Socialists.
No, it wasn't themselves. Really.
Yeah, Goebbels.
No.
Goebbels. Yes. But yeah. That no, Palestine.
I don't.
A Nazi
that.
Goes to Palestine.
No, I don't think he does it. That's translations into English. In fact, the Nazi would not have written "Nazi goes to Palestine." They wouldn't use the word.
But wasn't it just a contraction?
It was a Jewish contraction. It was like, and it has a connotation that has kind of like a Z in it, kind of the same way that, you know, that
Ashkenazi.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, Nick, we'll get you back in, buddy.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks. All right. All righty then. Let's go to Robert, the man with 50,000 notes on David Duke's teaching. Is it up to 50,000, Robert, or is it?
About 40 now.
40 Dr. now. Duke. Okay. Get moving. Yes. We need 50. Dr. Duke,
I'm going to paraphrase.
What? Go ahead.
I'm going to paraphrase George Washington. And I hope that you can provide a backstory of why he was saying this, what was going on that would make him want to say this.
Okay.
Ready?
Yes.
It's much to be lamented that each state long ago has not hunted the Jews down as the greatest enemies we have. George Washington. Why do you say that?
Well, I'm not sure if he did. However, he's quoted in the sayings of George Washington, I think by Appleby, years ago in that book. But not because something's in a book doesn't mean he said it. However, there is a lot of things that he did say that certainly does call in question the Jews. And he did talk about a lot of aspects of the American government and the American understanding. And there were Jews on, by the way, both sides of the American Revolution. There were Jews on the side of Britain, and Jews, supposedly, they were loaning it like they always do in wars on both sides. But I think that George Washington wasn't dealing much with the Jewish question. One of the interesting things I think it's important to know in American history, and this is something important to know for the leftists and so forth, which is really interesting, is, of course, the Jewish role in the Middle Passage in the slave trade, in the Atlantic slave trade from Africa. It was completely dominated by Jews in the United States. They were headquartered in Newport, Rhode Island, and New Haven, Connecticut. They were almost all Jews. They were mainly Portuguese Jews. And they also controlled the slave trade in South America, Brazil. And they bragged about it. Jewish historians bragged about their role in the slave trade. one of the most interesting things about proving that, and this is very important because this was going on all during those times, the Jewish slave trade. And by the way, the center of the slave trade in the colonies was, in fact, where you had the biggest concentration of Jews. There wasn't many Jews, but there's the biggest concentration of Jews, and the oldest synagogues were New Haven and Newport, Rhode Island. I mean, you can't make it up, can you? And this was a great crime against black people, and that was the greatest death to slavery. It wasn't the institution in America that was so terrible. Compared to Africa, it was probably a step up. At the same time, it was a horrific institution. And even the Jewish American biographer, and this is a guy that wrote the story for Encyclopedia Britannica on the Jewish subject of Encyclopedia Britannica back in the 1950s. And he wrote specifically that the Jews controlled the commerce of Europe during the Middle Ages, especially the slave trade. They've been the captains of slave trade, which is a disreputable, horrific human rights violating source. And also, by the way, they also were the biggest purveyors of white slavery and these organized prostitution rackets and human trafficking rackets that have existed for hundreds and hundreds of years. And they also had a lot to do with the slave trading of Europeans, which are captured by the corsairs and the Muslims in North Africa, the Moors and the corsairs, which would do slave raids on the European continent, on the coastal continent. So these are kind of things that again, this always never talked about by the left. And every time they want to talk about white racism or something, white racism or white colonialism was probably less horrific in the invasions of white Europeans by, for instance, the Ottoman Empire or the Moors, or what happened with Genghis Khan, what happened with the Golden Horde. And, you know, but this was promoted by Jews because they were trying to demonize whites so they could take over the West. And the reason why they're able to kill the Palestinians at will right now with genocide is because they have taken over the West. That's why that Israel is empowered. And they to do this, they had to demonize white people.
Dave, we got to talk about George Washington. Let me just say this because we're going to the next caller.
Sure.
Robert, there's a book called George Washington and the Jews, right, mm-hmm. from 2005. Just listen to this. I'll read it real quick. This volume explores the background and circumstances that brought about a milestone relationship between George Washington and the Jews. President George Washington was the first head of a modern nation to openly acknowledge the Jews as full-fledged citizens of the land in which they had chosen to settle. So I don't think that's true. I don't think there's any evidence that any of the founding fathers said any of that ridiculous nonsense.
So you think my paraphrase might be wrong?
I'm 100% sure it's wrong.
Wow. Well, you know, of course that, again, Jews always make out any hero. They always want to take anybody that's considered to be a hero and then say, okay, they were for the Jews. Some of them were, some of them weren't. I mean, there's no question that even though Winston Churchill talked about the Jewish role in communism, even his article, Zionism versus Bolshevism, was actually kind of a false flag. It was to try to tell people that, yeah, Jews were running communism, but Jewish Zionists were good people, and we should support the Jewish Zionists, and we should support the creation of the State of Israel.
Right, of course. But I don't think the Founding Fathers
were really Jew-wise. No, they
weren't. Yeah, I don't think they were.
I don't think they were Jew-wise. Yeah. And by the way, it's very, very easy, because Jews were so few in America. It's easy for a few Jewish bankers, a few Jews who might have some money, or a few Jewish slave traders who had a lot of money to spend. And back in those times, people had a lot less money. And the riches of those people compared to average people, even landowners like Washington, were minor. They could easily influence people. And it makes sense for them to try to protect their rackets, like even the slave trade or anything else that they do. as very powerful people. And this is the way it's always been in politics. One of the things I found real interesting, Dave, about Waters, Roger Waters' interviews that I was listening to just a little while ago, was the fact that he talked very, very much about how we don't have a democracy, not really. I mean, we have an oligarchy. We have a country ruled by money. And he's right in the sense that these big corporations, they don't have any loyalty to the people. And if you have an idea that people just worship money and the whole idea is to make money, and that's the big thing that you want, I mean, the National Socialists, you know, they were not in any way capitalists.
Dave, we got to get to the next call.
They were free enterprise people, but they definitely they wanted to say this. If you were going to have a company and you wanted to make money, fine, as long as you don't sell out the interests of our people. And definitely corporations are...
And no Michelins.
Right. No Michelins.
Thanks, Robert. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's bring in Always Honest. Always Honest, what's your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Dave. Amy.
Amy from where, Amy?
California.
California. All right, go ahead, Amy. The floor is yours.
Hi, Dr. Duke and Dave. So, Dr. Duke, thank you so much for your relentless pursuit of truth. I wanted to ask your opinion. I'm hearing a lot of alternative podcasters and media that keep referring and comparing the starvation that Israel is putting on to Palestine as a Holocaust. And I really think that it is more of a Holodomor, which was done by, I believe, the Bolshevik Jews in Russia.
That's right. It was led by Lazar Kaganovich, who was deputy premier of the Soviet Union. He was a Jew from Ukraine, but again, he wasn't loyal to the Ukrainians. He poisoned, or in effect, starved millions of Ukrainians. Mainly women and children died in that. So it was probably the biggest proportion of women and children that were ever killed in any mass action against the people. And that was the Ukrainian people. And that was written about by, in fact, a Jew, or some Jews that write about these kinds of things. His name was Lumpkin. He's the guy that invented the term genocide, and he described what the Jews of the Soviet Union did to Ukraine as absolute genocide, and how that it reduced the population of Ukrainians in that country 50%. They literally dropped from like 80% to 60% of the population. And it's very interesting, too, because in America, you know, we went from 90% of the population when I went to university, and even up until early 70s, it was almost 90% white. And our country now is 60% white. So in my lifetime, which is a very short period of time when you really think about it in the country's history, that they have changed the whole consensus of America. And they're doing the same thing. They did the same thing in Ukraine by starving millions of people, 7 to 11 million people. And they still haven't paid the price. They still haven't, you know, been called to account. And
that's why we're here.
Nobody's
aware
of it.
And the New York Times covered up for it. Covered it all up.
Amy, you got a question?
Yeah, I do. What do you think of those psychopath Jews in Israel that are posting the photographs from those starving Russians? Starving people in Ukraine during the Holodomor, and comparing it to the poor children that are dying right now and being photographed in Israel, in Palestine. The Gaza.
Well, what are they trying to say by that? I mean, you know, I guess they're trying to blame the Russians for it.
No, they're actually not. They're saying these are the children from the Nazi camps when the Allied troops went in and saved them from their prison. So, there's so much propaganda and so much
never
baloney and lies.
Let me play something for you. I think you'd enjoy this. This is from Shula Mitu. She was a Jewish minister. Oh, bless you.
Thank you.
Bless you.
It's that time of the year. All the pollen is flying everywhere.
This was an Israeli minister.
I'm cooking a steak and I got pepper up my nose.
This is an Israeli.
That too, pepper and pollen. Yeah.
Well,
sorry, Dr. Dave.
You both are peppers. That's for sure. So anyway, so this is from Israeli Minister Shulamit, and this was an interview that she did on Democracy Now, and she talks about how the Holocaust is a trick that they always use. They always, whenever they people point out the evil that Israel is doing or whatever, this was an Israeli minister. They always bring out the Holocaust. Listen to this. This is amazing.
He has is a voice of criticism we don't often hear in the United States. Often when there is dissent expressed in the United States against policies of the Israeli government, people here are called anti-Semitic. What is your response to that as an Israeli Jew?
Well, it's a trick. We always use it.
Trick.
When from Europe somebody criticizes Israel, then we bring up the Holocaust. When in this country people are criticizing Israel, then they are anti-Semitic. And the organization is strong and has a lot of money. And the fight between Israel and the American Jewish establishment are very strong, and they are strong in this country, as you know, and they have power, which is okay, they are talented people, and they have power, money, and media, and other things, and their attitude is Israel, my country, right or wrong, the identity fiction, and they are not ready to hear criticism, and it's very easy to blame people who criticize certain acts of the Israeli government as anti-Semitic, and to bring up the Holocaust and the suffering of Jewish people, and that justifies everything we do to the Palestinians.
Wow, that's one Jew I really, really like. And I appreciate any Jew that it kind of reveals the truth that just about everybody realizes, but they don't ever dare say it. And if they did say it, more people would realize it. It just reminds me of the old Polish proverb that goes, a Jew always cries in pain as he strikes you. And again, the one thing I can say about this whole October 7 terrible, horrible, unbelievable terrorism and everything, that in October 7, right, there was supposedly 1,200 Jews, whatever, died. It was actually about 1,000.
I think they've admitted it's actually less than that.
They're saying 1,000, yeah, now.
600 now. They're much lower.
But you know what? The interesting thing is, and this is a crazy thing about it, right? So these are supposed to be evil. They're like ISIS, and they're just mass murdering, and they should be, you know, they should all be killed, and Gaza must be destroyed. All the Gaza must be destroyed. And yet, all right, the number of Jewish children, and that's what they're always saying. They started saying 40 Israeli babies were beheaded, and all this crap is all a lie. Well, the Israeli government itself admitted that a total out of the 1,200 or 1,000, whatever it was 36 Jewish children. 36. Now, over the last 20 years, there's been about 7 or 8 major Jewish operations that killed hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Palestinian children. Each of those operations, Protective Edge and Cast Lead and all these things, right? Every single one of these is 10 times more than what the Palestinians are alleged to have killed in this raid, while they killed over 10,000 Israeli, you know, innocent people, men, women, and children, and at least 30-40% of them were children. Just like 40% of the 75,000 maimed and some killed, that number of children and women. It's just amazing. So if Hamas is guilty and they should be shut down, they should be killed, then what does that say about Israel? Because Israel has vastly killed more children than they did, and proportionally it's unbelievable. It's 101, 201.
Amy, thank you, dear. We'll get you back in.
Can I say one more thing?
You sure can. How's the steak coming?
I just put it in the oven to finish it.
Okay, and the dog?
Hungry.
Put the dog in the oven.
I smacked her with the pot holder.
And throw her in the oven and just get it over with. It's ridiculous. I've eaten dog before in the Navy. I ate dog. Ooh, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Lucky you. I've had exotic meats, but not that.
I was in the Orient, yeah.
So this is what I saw recently that's circulating around. There's a rabbi, American rabbi, that it was saying, well, you know, us Jews have always wanted the Goyim to love us, but now we're changing face and we want them to fear us.
That's Rabbi Boteach, whatever his
name
is.
Thank you. Yes. I never pronounce their names right.
Yeah, I just read that article today.
Can you believe that? Well, finally, they're putting their foot on our throats harder.
Oh, they're doing it. They've been doing it a long time. Yeah, it's always that way, though. You know,
yeah.
At one point really they say we're so kind, and next point they say they're going to, you know, threaten us. Look, what they've always used, their biggest weapon has always been intimidation. It's always been threats. It's always been destruction. It's always been ending people's careers, their lives, putting in people in prison.
Spineless cowards as men.
Well, exactly.
And women. They're spineless.
But, you know, it's always that way.
That's how they can drop bombs and not have hand-to-hand combat with
an
army that doesn't exist.
You know, and one thing that Solzhenitsyn taught, I've never related this before, I don't think, in terms of publicly anyway. One thing that Solzhenitsyn told me when I was talking with him one time, a long talk when we were in Gorky Park one day, and he was telling me about the conditions in the gulags, and he told me that of the torturers in there, and they were constantly torturing and tormenting the prisoners, you know, the Christians. And he told me, he said, my God, he said, the strange thing was that the worst torturers were these spineless, skinny, weak, nasty Jews who had no strength of themselves. They had no courage whatsoever. And they were always the worst torturers were the weakest, most evil looking creatures that you ever saw, which is kind of interesting because, you know, generally speaking, strong people are not torturers, you know, healthy people. But these Jews are just, you know, they're perverted. And not all of them. I'm just saying that he said some of the portraits of these Jewish torturers, for instance, in the prisons, for instance, in the head of the KGB in Moscow, they were just, you know, they were not only evil people and torturers, but they were physical specimens of just, you know, like misshapen, ugly, nasty, mm-hmm. and weak. But they loved to torture.
They say all that evil shows up on your face by the time you're 50. And Victoria Nuland, whatever her name is, she's a perfect example of that because she was a young, attractive woman at one time. And only 20 years later, look at her. She's hideous.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks. Thanks, Amy. We'll get you back
Thank you.
Unless you're eating the steak or the dog.
Oh, okay? No. It's going to cook down for a bit.
All right.
I'm good.
No,
I got all my questions.
Never happens.
We'll get you back in.
We love Hang dogs out. Here. Don't ever eat a dog now, folks.
No. I was just kidding. You know that. No, I wasn't.
That Catherine. Reminds me of a story about Hong Kong. There's a famous story about a woman going to a good restaurant in Hong Kong and she had a small dog. I used to have a small dog myself. And so they go in, and so she just goes in, and she's getting some stir fry or something. And they said, well, we'll take care of the dog, you know, for you while you eat. And then she sits down to eat, and 20 minutes later, they brought her dog cooked.
Oh, my God.
Can you
I believe
imagine?
It. No,
they thought that she that you like some people. Like
no, they do that. Obviously, I was serious about that.
Now that's a horrific story, isn't it?
That is.
Can you imagine? Horrific. Oh, no. I'll take care of your dog, and this is simple Westerner has no idea what's going
no
on
idea.
In the world.
Yeah.
And then,
but we're the evil ones, right,
on
Dave? We're the evil ones.
Well, I'm not saying they're
yeah.
evil because
no, we are the evil ones.
Yeah.
Catherine, are you ready for your question or comment?
Oh, hi. Can you hear me?
No, well, but go ahead anyway.
Is like they always want to say bad stuff about the Cossacks. The Cossacks would rescue the Christians that the Jews had enslaved, you know, in the Slavic countries. Those were the Cossacks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
The Cossacks were like a legend with the Russians and the Ukrainians about you know, their courage and their ferocity in battle.
But they were totally Christian, the Cossacks, right? Were they old believers?
Oh, yeah, they were Christian.
They were totally Christian. But, you know, one thing, you know, we've had our minds so poisoned by the lies of the Jews and just even the way the Jews think. It's a lying way to think. And you just brought up, I can never say her name, that Israeli, you know, whatever she was, minister.
Victoria Nuland.
No.
Shulami.
Yeah.
Oh, Shulami. The one that Shulami said,
you know, it's a trick, we always use it. We assume that she's condemning that, but she might not be. She might be like, hey, that's chutzpah. That's a great thing to do.
Well, let me give an example. You talk about the Cossacks. Let me just give you a little bit of history, which is not it won't take long. Everyone knows, you know, the Jewish neocons and the Jewish neocommies in Congress who own the media. They hate Christian Russians. Now, it's easy to prove they also hate Ukrainians. Now, I've got an article right in front of me. I just pulled it up. It's from a famous Jewish website called My Jewish Learning. You can find it yourself, right? So why would the USA and the UKR, Ukraine Jewish gangster government, slaughter hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians in a pointless war? Think about it. So here's My Jewish Learning. Here's the headline. It shows you a picture of Cossacks with a Jewish head on a stake. And this is a painting, right? Cossacks, you know, painting with Jewish heads impaled, right? One head impaled, actually. And Jewish history, it says, who were the Cossacks? These 17th century Ukrainian rebels perpetuated brutal pogroms against Jews. Ukrainians view them as exemplars of their unique national spirit, heroic, nonconformist, and fiercely independent, defending Ukrainian national sovereignty from all enemies. But for Jews, Cossacks are the symbols of fear and hatred, the perpetrators of centuries of brutal programs. There you go. Maybe now, those of you listening who've got an open mind, realize while they were very happy to get Ukrainians into war and dying by the hundreds of thousands in order to hurt as many Russians as they can and to kill two Slavs with one stone.
Something's happening with Catherine, so I had to mute her. And I'm going to remove
her. Sounds like the dog is attacking her.
Something's happening, but it's not right to be moving around wherever she is and doing that. So let's bring in Robert.
Why is Zelensky and his Jewish rulers over Ukraine, you know, fighting in a war they could never win, killing hundreds of thousands of Cossacks, you know, sending them to their deaths, you know? Well, maybe because Jews hate Cossacks. Isn't that interesting?
They hate, like you said, Dave, they hate everything that's not Jew. Robert, go ahead, buddy.
Dr. Duke, I visited a church and they talked about this missionary couple. They were in Israel as missionaries. And I was thinking when I got home that Israel has anti-missionary laws, don't they? Where, you know, you can get 5 years in prison for evangelical.
Yes, you can. You can.
You know, you can't give them a track or anything that might, you know, entice them to become a Christian, right?
That's right.
Is it true?
Basically, it's proselytizing. So it just means anybody that's trying to recruit people to the Christian church, Christian faith, or Christian ministry. That's what it is.
That's all true right now, today.
Yeah, right now. That's Israeli law.
Okay.
Up to 5 years imprisonment.
Wow.
All right, Robert. Get your visa. You're going to go to Israel soon. Okay, buddy. All right. We're going to bring in Russ. Russ, you got the floor. You got another question or comment?
Yeah, I think I heard Tulsi Gabbard say that she was happy with how Netanyahu was handling the situation.
Oh, gee, that was terrible.
Well, yeah, she was echoing what Donald Trump said, like you said. I mean, she wants to be Trump's VP, so she's definitely interested in the job. She said so.
That's really disgusting.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know of anyone in the United States that is willing to say anything negative about, to identify a thing such as the Jewish lobby. That they'll say Israel lobby, that to put point the finger, to say the J word. I don't know one single person in America who's, other than yourself, who's willing to do that publicly, because you just, you're going to be history. Any job you might have, you're going to lose it. Seems that way.
It seems that way. And that's exactly how they work. I mean, and when they take somebody and destroy their career, I mean, sometimes their whole life's work, it's a terrible thing to do to someone. It's almost as bad as putting somebody in jail, destroying their life's work, or destroying their business, or just trying to destroy their career, whether it be in sports, entertainment, media, anything. And that's exactly what they do.
Thanks, Russ.
Okay.
We'll get you back in.
Okay.
Okay, we got Johnny from Wilmington, Delaware.
Hey, Dave Gahari, what do you say, doctor?
How are you, my friend?
Okay.
What do you got for the doctor?
I tuned in 40 minutes late. Sorry, I wasn't thinking about your show. I was, oh, God. But I was wondering, did you guys talk about Governor Kristi Noem's?
Did you hear? Yes, we did.
You did talk about that earlier?
Early on, yeah.
Ain't that's horrible.
Oh, oh it's God. Terrible. Okay, every day, our family would pray for the God's chosen people, the Jews, not for America, not for anything, just the chosen Jews, the same Jews that persecuted Christians and that the New Testament rails against for hundreds and hundreds of pages about their damage that they do to people of the Middle East, Christians, the mass murders, and that Paul talks about their mass murders. I mean, the famous quote, as you know, is in, we have in Thessalonians, Corinthians. I mean, you can, there's so many things you can read. And the Jews crucified our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and despise all men, all people, right? And keep us from reaching to, you know, our fellow Christians, speaking to our fellow Christians. But God's wrath has come upon them at last. And of course, the famous quote by Jesus Christ, which when he gets in a big argument with the Pharisees, which are the ones that have the oral tradition, which is the vile Talmud. And Christ says to them, and it says at the end of this, they say back to him in the New Testament, it says, and the Jews answer them. And Christ says, ye and ye father are the sons of the devil. And the lusts of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth because there's no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own essence, and he's the father of the lie. And that's exactly what they're doing. Just like they're killing the Palestinians while they're lying and acting like the Palestinians committed this mass murder of Christians and or Jews, excuse me, and children and so forth. While they murder and maim thousands, tens of thousands of children and others.
Johnny, you got a question for the doctor?
Yeah, a couple of things. Well, that whole thing, October 7th, with Hamas. According to my understanding, Hamas was created by Israel to offset the PLO. And
they did that. However, you know, they wanted a more radical version of it because they wanted to divide and conquer. They always try to do these kind of things. So at that point, they were dealing with, you know, the Palestinian Authority, PA. And so they wanted that originally. But that doesn't mean that Hamas are bad people. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of radicals. And I do think Hamas was a real organization. I think they were standing up for the Palestinian people. And they did a military operation which was far less damaging from civilians and innocents than anything the Jews ever did. against the Palestinians, where they killed Palestinian children wholesale, just like they did after October 7. So this was not something in a out of context. You got to look at this whole thing for the last 75 years of mass murder of Palestinian, dislocation of them, stealing their land, their property, torturing them in their prisons, and taking thousands of Palestinians hostage from their families into Israeli dungeons where they were tortured. And that's according to B'Tselem, these other Jewish organizations that document the horrors of Israel.
You don't think that Hamas might still be infiltrated by...
No, I don't think so.
Assad?
I don't think at all.
ISIS stands for Israeli Secret Intelligence Services.
Well, of course it does, because ISIS was supported by the Israeli state from the beginning, and it was supported by the American government. Who do you think we had the people from Saudi Arabia,
these
radical jihadists go into Syria and behead people? That was all led by our own Jewish government of the United States.
The neo-commies. You got that right.
That's right.
All right.
Thanks, Johnny. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Thanks, all right, Johnny.
You got
thanks.
It.
Thanks. Okay. Hang out. Okay. We got another caller, Mr. CB. You got the floor, buddy.
Shalom, gentlemen.
Shalom.
Oi.
Oi, they.
What's up, CB? Oh, no. It happened again. See that? That's not a... Well, what happens is somehow... When he calls, he gets in, no problem. But then he disappears. He's saying he's going to go out and come back in. You know, I had been doing interviews, you know, Dave, for decades. And sometimes the strangest things happen with technology. And when they don't want you to, you know, get somewhere, they stop you. I know they're in the back doors. I know they're listening to this, and I'm glad they are, and I know that they're disrupting it. So right. Let's give him a second to – there he is. Let's try it again. All right, man, let's try it again.
Can you hear me?
Yep, yeah. Perfect.
There we go.
Yeah.
Well, we'll say maybe it was my Wi-Fi. Maybe it wasn't our friends in Tel Aviv. But the question I had for the doctor this evening is due to his brilliant legal mind. What do you think, Doctor, we should do when you know, we finally win and we take back, you know, American things? What should we do with people like Christy Noem or these brain-dead Christian Zionists who have betrayed everything that America was founded upon and have betrayed, you know, Jesus Christ and betrayed America and betrayed the white race? What do you think we should do?
I think we should do the same things to them that she would have to do us. She wants to lock us up for defending ourselves against traitors to the United States of America and Jews that are loyal to Israel and supporting the killing of our own boys in wars for Israel based on lies. All these Jews that supported these wars, like the Iraq War, I like what's going on. And also the same thing that's going on with, in terms of Ukraine. They should be prosecuted. These are your traitors to America. And they should be punished according to the laws of this country. There shouldn't be any, it's not a witch hunt. It's not going to be something that's some sort of terrible prosecution. It's simply going to be looking at these people, examining them, and pointing out where they've committed crimes against the United States of America. And anybody who serves in Congress or who serves in any government position where they've taken an oath to defend America, who sells out America, destroys America, breaks American law. And like a good example, Biden should be not only impeached, he should be serving prison time right now, because we have laws on the books right now in Congress that if you give money or any arms to any country that's developing nuclear weapons without, you know, going through the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and having inspections and all that kind of thing, that's against the law, that's, you know, that's violation. And that's going on every day in Congress. All these monies that we sent to Israel or these other countries, they're violating the law. Israel's violating the law on a whole number of different levels, and they're committing religion treason. And by the way, if I were president, I would make any sort of support for Israel a criminal offense, and an offense that is worth a very severe federal crime, because they're supporting a country that is a terrorist state, which has committed terrorism against the United States of America on numerous occasions and is an enemy of America. So, and I think there's probably already laws on the books which would apply to anyone who sold out America or gave information to Israel or supported Israel and supported our boys dying in wars for Israel when those wars are really hurting and killing Americans unjustly. So I say prosecute them. And I think the governor is certainly on very thin ice, I think, legally in that regard.
Thanks, CB. We'll get you back in, buddy.
All right, sounds good.
All right. Okay, we're going around the horn. Jimmy, then we're going to get Nick in.
Okay,
Jimmy, go ahead,
guys.
Buddy.
Yeah, well, as far as what to do with the men, I mean, just running them out, and if they can live in a place, I think the world will take care of them eventually anyway, keep chasing them down. But man, it's just like there's so much work to be done. It's like we're so behind, or it just seems that way because of the way they can act so tough and bring up this anti-Semite BS, yeah, like laws and everything. They really act tough, a lot tougher than they are, and we all know that. But
let me give you an example of I think how the Jews operate. They're so different than we are. They never forgive. They never forget. They bring up things that happened a long time ago. Like, this is over 100 years ago. And here's something from Haaretz I just saw, and that it was in one of my files here. And it's called This Day in Jewish History. And the headline reads, they give it a headline, a big article by David B. Green. It says, this is the headline, 1919, Cossacks start pogrom in Ukraine, killing Jews, but sparing property. Within hours, about 1,500 Jews were dead because of or despite Semen Petrula, the Ukrainian leader whose role remains controversial to this day. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing they do. When you think about these kind of things, and these kind of things have happened so often to Jews over the years because of the fact that they were committing massacres against people, because they were committing crimes against people, because people were rising up against them. In 1919, Jews were behind communism. They were already killing people in the Soviet Union and in Eastern Europe. They were killing people.
All right, Dave, we got to go to the next one.
Communism, right?
Thanks, Jimmy.
That's why they were getting killed.
All right, next caller.
They killed 1,500 Jews, but let me just one last thing. They killed 1,500 Jews, right, according to this thing. They're going to remember that. How about the 3 or 4 million Russians that already were killed by 1919?
Yeah, that doesn't count. Only Jews matter.
How about the 3 or 4 million Christians?
Now, only Jews matter. Okay, now, Nick, you know, the militia guy, he wants to do the whole militia thing. He's running for governor. He says that as governor, he would get the Jews media to interview him. And I asked him how. He's going to explain now in less than 30 seconds.
Less than 30 seconds.
That's all you got?
First of all, I am not running for governor. Remember that. Without a campaign manager, I am not declaring, okay? Secondly, yes, I did not say I get the media to interview. I said they'd cover me. And that's by giving we the people the solution of getting rid of the Khazars, and that is state militia. There you go.
Okay, buddy.
Because that is the only thing that is a threat to them. Talk like Tommy Massey. I mean, it's fake conservatives. Yeah. They don't tell people how we get rid of the Jews.
But they're getting there.
They only whine about it.
Exactly. Thanks, Nick. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Sure.
Okay. We have to depose them. That's all. That's what we got to do.
All right. Let's bring in Robert real quick. Robert, go ahead, buddy. Fast one.
Dr. Duke, Mark Robinson's running for governor of North Carolina. What do you think about Mark Robinson? He's a black man. He said some pretty good things. What do you think?
Well, you know, in the final analysis down the line, are we really going to depend on those people to defend our interests? I don't know. I would like to think that, but I'd rather vote for someone who says the right things about white rights and dares to say it, if he does say those things, or about the Jewish structure. I'd rather vote for someone like that than some white guy who's a traitor to us. At the same time, it's really kind of it's like a controlled opposition almost, because when push comes to shove, are we going to really be able to depend on those people that's going to come through for us when the times really matter? I don't think so.
Thanks, Robert.
Good job. Thanks.
Okay, buddy. Yeah, you're probably right, Dave, but we are getting really close to that point.
Yeah.
And not just the point of things tipping over, but the point of the end of the show. So, yeah, Dave, let the listeners know how they can hear you this week.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Central Time on the Rinse Radio Network. You can also find me on my archives at Human Rights Radio, HRR, that's two R's, ADIO.net. And you can find my archives, and we have some great shows from last week. And you can also find my Gab at Real David Duke, and you can find my Odyssey at Real David Duke. And folks, I enjoyed being with you tonight. I'm not going to stay for the after party tonight. I've got a lot to do, and I got to get some sleep. But take care, everybody, and thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for your kind support. I'm at Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, folks, thank you for coming aboard. And stay tuned in for some more shows on Speak Free Radio. And we'll see you next week. You heard the man. No after show. Sorry about that. Have a great week.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.